This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 306 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. You spend a third of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? Brooklinen makes it possible to get amazingly luxurious sheets at home for an even more amazing price.
Brooklinen was the first direct-to-consumer bedding company, meaning they work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen, just a great product and service.
Mix and match over 25 colors and patterns to make your bedroom just right. I got mine in graphite and steel Oxford stripe to perfectly complement my charcoal comforter.
My Brooklinen sheets are so comfy, I don't want to get out of bed. They're smooth, soft, and I love that they go with my bedroom decor and color scheme. I got a completely white set.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on, and their towels have turned my bathroom into a spa. I couldn't recommend them more for friends, family, or treating yourself to the upgrade you deserve. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These are the best sheets ever. And now, on to our read-along. We are continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with chapter 36 entitled World Unseen. And people, we are finishing part four tonight.
Claire is back to her experiments. She finally has some peace in her empty house. She goes outside to scoop up some of the slimy, nasty horse trough water in a jar. Then she gets samples from the spring house and a puddle of muddy water near the privy. Yum. So Claire's experiments are with the microscope. The first sample, probably the horse water.
Did you miss the transition from one sample to the other? Personally, when listening to reading the chapter, I missed the transition from her looking at one sample to the next. And I was like, wait. She wasn't looking at that the whole time. And when did she put that on a slide?
Yeah, we missed that. It wasn't there. She said something about next, but okay. She didn't say what it was or how she got it or where it came from or whatever. The first sample, she mentions paramecium. Oh, this is taking me back to cellular and microbiology. Fun times. Then Jamie walks in, asking her what she's up to. She tells him to have a look.
And he's not looking at paramecium, people.
No, that's where Summer's talking about. Like, when did this get switched?
That's what I'm saying. I was expecting him to look at paramecium and be like, what are those weird things? There was all kinds of tails.
Quote, I see them, wee things with tails swimming all about, unquote. Both are happy, seemingly. And then, quote, look at them, such busy wee strivers as they are, all pushing and writhing against one another, and such a mass of them, unquote. His reaction when she tells him what they are, this is one of the classic DG scenes.
And it's one of those scenes that you kind of forget about until you're listening to it again because you're like, I love this scene. This scene made me laugh and chuckle. But you forget about it because it doesn't move the plot. It's not vital to the storyline, which makes me think it might not be included in the series, even though it would be kind of hysterical, but also kind of weird. I think that would be weird to play out. Because even I was a little shocked when he was like, where did you get those? When she finally told him what they were. And then she says how she had them. She's like, you gave them to me. You put them in my safekeeping. And I'm like, I don't remember reading about you putting that on a slide. And I feel like there's a reason for that.
The reason was because so Diana could get this reaction.
Yeah.
So clutching himself protectively. Quote, how the hell did you get them?
Exactly.
Unquote. From him, of course. And no, They won't live long outside of a human, but they don't die right away if they're kept warm and in a warm and moist environment. He says, they seem very fierce.
So, correct me. Did she say that he gave them to her that morning or that evening before?
No, I think it was that morning.
Okay. They are getting down to business, you guys.
I mean, it's Jamie and Claire. Come on.
I know. But I'm like, I mean, what's cool about this scene is that it allows the pair of them to be explicitly sexually active without having to write another sex scene. You know what I mean? It like sets all of the stage for they're still doing it, y'all, without Diana having to spend a few pages describing thrusting and moaning.
So she ends up actually explaining the birds and the bees to him, scientifically speaking. He gets a little cold and says he knows where babies come from. But, quote, I just didn't ken that that all this daffery was going on.
Unquote. Daffery.
So then Jamie turns the topic toward Jem. If seed can live inside a woman for up to a week, it is possible that Jem is Roger's. And she's like, well, yeah, I said as much to Roger and Bree. Claire is not quite ready to go into genes and chromosomes with him yet, but she explains the purpose of her experiments to see what she could see with the microscope and then perhaps what she'd be able to diagnose with it, the microscope, and then perhaps offer the correct treatment. Before he leaves, he asks her to give the sperms a decent burial.
He already buried them.
Second burial.
He needs to let it go. He didn't care about them before he saw them point. On.
Yeah, but he didn't know.
But is he going to care from here on out? Does it change things? Like, will that change how he affects what he does?
We've read the books. It does not.
I don't want your I've read the books knowledge. I want your let's.
It doesn't.
Posit,
come on.
Let's posit what he could do now that he knows what they are.
Eileen P. writes, there seems to be a theme regarding reproduction in this book. At the gathering, there is menstruating Lizzie, perimenopausal Claire, and Marsali and Bree in the early stages of motherhood, with Marsali on the repeat cycle. Back home at Fraser's Ridge, it's time to explore Jamie's semen. Oh, Lord. Let's really delve into it. After all, it is book 5 in the series, so it's about time, really. The King of Men has fathered 3 children, Faith, Brianna, and Willie. But he is a grandfather now, so let's see if his sperm are still up to the task. Time to take a sample. I'm sure Claire enjoyed collecting it and put it under a microscope. The King of Men is still the King of Men. His microtadpoles are highly competitive Olympic swimmers ready to go for the gold. I'm sure Jamie and Claire will find a way to celebrate.
Could you imagine, though, if Diana had written him as having, like,
sluggish, weak,
sad sperm?
Oh.
King of Men can't have sad sperm? How would the whole conversation have been if they'd been, like, sluggish and, like, not really moving and him being like, those are some weird-looking taily tadpole things? They look kind of sad. Why are they so sad? Because you're old, Jamie. You're old and your sperm is also old.
Martina P. writes, Claire greatly enjoys a moment of solitude in her surgery. She seems very content having some time to herself and being able to conduct some scientific experiments. Jamie joins her in the surgery and we are about to witness possibly the funniest scene in the entire book. Jamie's inquisitive mind is about to get a shock of a lifetime when he finds out that the moving tadpoles with the beautiful tails were not in fact germs, but his own sperm.
Thanks for rolling both of those R's.
You're welcome. Diana delights us with the dialogue that is so funny. I really had to laugh out loud. Jamie being equally embarrassed and proud of his Vera fierce buggers. I also love how Claire explained how she found herself in their custody that morning. The conversation continues about reproduction, with Jamie explaining his understanding of baby making. The question of how long sperm can live in their natural habitat leads Jamie to speculate that there is a definite chance that Jemmy is Roger's child. The question of Jem's parentage seems to be on the surface in many scenes. Jamie is a very forward-thinking and intelligent man with a very inquisitive mind, which is partly due to his higher education. I love his fascination about 20th century medicine, and Claire takes her time in explaining. He is shocked at some of her statements, but never, ever has he doubted her. Anyway, the conversation concludes with Jamie's suggestion that the sperms deserve a proper burial. Claire assures him that she will take good care of them, as she always does. Diana has the best sense of humor with these dialogues. Please, Matt and Tony, just take this straight from the book.
I feel like it's not. There's too much other things to do in this book. I feel like that might not make it. But maybe my saying that it's not going to be in the book will. I mean, in the show.
Oh, you mean like reverse?
Yeah, maybe reverse will work as well. We'll see. We'll see if it works. I feel like this is not, while I enjoy this scene greatly, I don't think it is plot.
It's not
important.
Needed.
It's not important. But I mean, I enjoy it, but I don't think it furthers the plot enough that it has to be in. And if they have to start cutting stuff, I feel like this is on the list.
So Claire confirms that she has identified strains of penicillin. There were a few different samples she had done, and the crust, the one with the goose grease, had been best. She believes they most closely resemble the image, what she sees, resemble the image of penicillium that she'd committed to memory from her textbooks. She took the mold scrapings, put them into the cooled broth to propagate. Some died. It's interesting. I don't think I learned that it wasn't the mold itself that was the antibiotic, but rather its secretion until I read The Fiery Cross. But that would have been around 2001 or so when it first came out. But I have definitely forgotten it subsequent times. Every time I reread it, I relearn that the secretion is the actual penicillin. That's cool. I always forget that. Jamie's helpful here, too. Quote, so what if got there is broth that the mold has pissed in? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Quote, and the mold piss is what cures sickness. I
always
sensible. Unquote. Apparently, because other types of piss are used for medicine. She says, nope, not by her anyway. Then it was time for the removal of some Beardsley balls. Josiah was up first. She has both twins drink some of the goose grease broth with the mold piss.
Not their balls. Don't say balls. It's not balls. That's not balls.
It's throat balls.
No, they're not balls at all. They're nodes.
But they're still spheres. They're balls.
No. I'm going to call on that.
You can call whatever you want. I'm still going
to
call.
Nobody wants to talk about balls in their throat. So let's just move on.
Correct. Jamie gives her side eye. Huh? You can drink the stuff? Says he, who got a few arse pricks of penicillin. And arse prick. He's like, you had to do that?
Exactly. He's like, wait, I had that option?
And then it was Kezi's turn. So Josiah did pretty well. And Kezi gets through it, but he ends up fainting.
But his were worse.
Oh, his were a lot worse. And at the end, as she's cleaning, she quotes my beloved Julian of Norwich to Adso. Quote, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Unquote.
But I would like the foreshadowing to be called out that Ms. Lizzie
was hanging on to both.
Uh-huh.
And between them.
She promised both of them that she wouldn't leave and she would be there for them. Let's just enjoy that foreshadowing. I will go no further. I just want us all to enjoy that foreshadowing.
Eileen P. writes, I kept thinking, quote, 'tis but a scratch, just a flesh wound, as Keziah passes out on the surgery floor. Thankfully, both Josiah and Keziah will survive Claire's scalpel due to her discovery of penicillin. Doesn't she change history by doing that? Maybe what happens on the ridge stays on the ridge.
But I would argue that who's to say she didn't always do that? And that's the trouble with time travel.
Martina P. writes, Claire has prepared her surgery for hours as she is about to perform surgery on the Beardsley twins to take out their infected tonsils. Diana gives us great detail about the surgery, and I love the fact that Jamie acts as Claire's assistant. He has great interest in the twins and needs them to be healthy. Lizzie is already on the scene, providing great comfort to both the boys.
Is it great? Was that in parentheses?
Nope.
Great comfort?
Nope.
Oh, it should have been.
Claire has prepared homemade penicillin, and the twins had to drink it in a broth. Claire is very satisfied with the outcome of the surgery. It is apparent to me how much Claire loves her work. She does need Jamie by her side, but she also needs her work to be entirely happy. The surgery gave her that sense of accomplishment once again.
And that was chapter 36. Moving on to chapter 37, entitled Mail Call. I bet you know what this chapter is about.
A call?
Mail.
As in non-woman?
As in letters.
Look. Mail has arrived via Fergus. Jocasta has sent Bree a ladies' home journal of the day. Claire tells her to look at the back for the real treats. And they're funny.
Well, she sent those and then like newspapers for the last God knows how long, because that's the closest they get to what they said, like novels. That's the closest they get.
It's their movies, Summer.
Yeah.
It's their Netflix and not chill. They have enough time to chill.
All they do is chill because there's nothing else to do, as evidenced by Your World's Unseen.
Another package was a book from Lord John and more letters for Jamie. So it had been approximately 6 months or more since they'd left young Ian with the Mohawk. Probably a little bit more, because that had been when Jamie had written to Jenny about him and how he stayed with them. Bree noted that one of the letters was from Lieutenant Hayes. The reason I mentioned Jenny is because Claire looked through the letters for to see if she could recognize any handwriting of Jenny's, because she knew that Jamie so much wanted to hear from his sister. And the reason that I mentioned the time that they marked on is that ever since Jamie had written to report that young Ian had stayed with the Mohawk, Jenny hadn't written back.
And she needs to write something, because right now he's feeling the guilt of the unspoken. So if she would just yell at him and call him nasty names,
that's true,
he could move on.
But it would be something.
The fact that she says nothing, neither an apology or it's okay or it's not your fault or I hate you and I'm never going to talk to you again, because he hasn't gotten anything, there's no closure. So he's just stuck in this like nebulous state of not knowing. And that's worse, honestly, than knowing someone hates you or knowing someone forgives you.
Bree noted that one of the letters was from Lieutenant Hayes. Bree breaks the seal and reads. And Claire's like, huh?
She's like, that's not for you. And she goes, well, the other one wasn't for you either.
Exactly. Uh-huh. She's like, oh, well, that one either. Bree's just breaking them open. She breaks the seal and reads. Basically, Hayes had heard from a private Ogilvy, a conversation that the latter had overheard in a shipyard pertaining to Stephen Bonnet. He says that Bonnet appears to be a smuggler, dealing in higher quality and quantity of contraband that is unusual, of an unusual type. His connections are also unusual. Now, Summer, before we get further, I had a question, because this room, even though they didn't say this, and I'm not going to say anything about any other books, have you seen, I think it's on Netflix, it's a movie called... It's not a Netflix film, I don't think, but it's on Netflix, called Trafficked.
No, but I'm assuming it's about either people who smuggle shit or people.
It's about, well, both. It's about people, specifically young women.
Like sex trafficking?
Yeah.
Okay. I was sure it was either that, but because you mentioned Stephen Bonnet, it was the lead into that, but I thought it could be like actually smuggling and not just human trafficking.
No, it was human trafficking. And the reason, even though we don't have any detail at this moment in that direction or not, it's been a while. Like, there are movies, as you guys may have heard, like zombies, that I have hard stops. Like, I won't watch zombie movies. I don't like a lot of horror. I can watch like kind of monster-y stuff. Like, the really, I mean, I know zombies are monsters, but other than zombies, like, I can watch some stuff, but I can't handle zombies. I can't handle supernatural stuff, even though it's totally fictional. I just can't do like devil, demon. I just can't. And so I'm pretty good about like self-monitoring. Like, I make sure like, nope, Ginger, you don't need to see that, because I have no will to see anything like that. Well, this was not supernatural. This was not zombies. So anyway, I knew the topic is, you know, it's obviously not a fun topic. It's an important topic and it's a disgusting topic, but it's a real and it's an important topic. So I figured, okay, well, you know, I'll watch it. Oh my God. By the end of it, Summer, I was like, I was anxiety ridden.
Yeah, I personally can't watch.
I don't even have a kid. If you have a kid, do not watch it.
I can't watch movies where pregnant women getting assaulted doesn't bother me as much anymore because I'm not pregnant.
That's awesome.
But there was a period of time when I couldn't watch that, when, you know, when pregnant women were being like damaged, yeah, or in any way. That phase of my life has passed. But now it's about kids being assaulted, taken advantage of. I can't watch any of that. Not true crime, not fictionalized. Mm-hmm. I can't watch any of that. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. And I don't like minors being taken advantage of.
Mm, oh my God. It was, yeah. I mean, I recommend it as a film in that I think it's a well-made film. Oh my gosh. It's so freaking effective. It was hard to watch. There were times I knew it was a film. I know it's fictionalized, but it I will say it's based on a true story. So it wasn't just, and then at the end they tell you about, you know, without releasing names or whatever, they tell you like, this guy was prosecuted or whatever. It's on the edge of your seat and not in a good way. And it's like you can't exhale very much. And anyway, that's what I thought of. And I just watched it like less than a week ago, maybe last weekend. And so when I think about smuggling, and even though I don't think they use the word trafficking, but oh God, it was just like I had a flashback to that movie. So anyway, it was so scary because it's real. And this they may have changed a few, you know, details, but that those events actually happened. And I think the worst part is scared the crap out of me was, yes, what happened to the girls. That was the worst. But that the people who were selling them into it, like one of the very first scenes is there's a young girl, and this breaks my heart, a young girl who's 18 and she's or 17 in the foster care system. She like they're orphan. She's with her sister, her little sister, and she's 18. And the caseworker or someone comes to the home, which is run by a nun, and they say, okay, you know, today's her birthday. She has to leave tomorrow. Like, they are not allowed to be at these homes past 18, right? Because they age out. So this caseworker, who knows how long she had known, played by, I just can't remember her name, comes to get the paperwork, have the nun sign, because she's the authority there, I guess the figure or whatever. And she takes all of her, you know, her bag, her stuff, whatever, takes her in this car and says, okay, we're going to go to Texas and you're going to get, you know, da 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 da, whatever. And also, she's from Northern California, which really, like, hit me in the gut. But anyway, oh, Judd, Ashley Judd. Ashley Judd was taking her in the car, and as they're driving, like, probably hundreds of miles away, she pulls off onto this, like, dirt road where there's a truck waiting. And this woman, who was, like, I guess a contractor or a government worker, had sold this girl into trafficking. That's where I started to get, like, I started to feel sick. Anyway, yeah, this is probably not the best, advertisement for it. But anyway, so back to Bonnet. One name mentioned that Hayes passes on is Butler, and another is Karen. Those mean nothing to me, quite honest. And maybe they don't come back, but I don't know. Do those names ring a bell, Summer?
Karen
and Butler?
No, because the only thing I think about with Karen is all those memes that are like, it's a this Karen.
Hayes purposefully passes by a building mentioned by Ogilvy and finds out it's owned by a Ronald Priestley and Philip Wiley.
That sounds familiar.
I feel like we've met him before.
Just a little bit. Him and his beauty mark. Finally, Hayes relays that the name of Bonnet is known, well known, but few wish to speak of it.
He has to be well known if he's that good of a smuggler. The fact that he's smuggling in, like, top shelf stuff and he's not being stopped, yeah. He has to be well known. He has to be connected to the upper people, because otherwise he would have been caught and, like, dealt with if he wasn't, like, connected pretty high up.
So what does this mean? The reader knows that Jamie was still hunting for Bonnet, even though Bree has asked him not to. Claire, after she sees it, wanted to burn the letter so life could just go on and they could pretend they didn't see it. But no, right at that moment, Jamie cries and Bree jumps up to go upstairs to get him. After she comes back, though, with Jem, puts him to the boob, we find out that Bree actually already knew that Jamie was going ahead. And that reminded me, like, oh, that's right, because she points Claire in the direction of Jamie's logbook. She's pissed. Remember that when she was at Fraser's Ridge, when they were all doing the whole militia
thing? When she was home alone with all the strangers.
Yeah, exactly. When she was herself, that's when she saw the logbook or saw a letter, something. I believe that's when she found out that Jamie had done this against her wishes. So she's pissed. Bree's worried about what will happen if Jamie does try to kill Bonnet. Claire, alas, isn't that worried. Quote, Sherlock Fraser and his sidekick, Lord John Watson. Unquote. That was funny. So Claire's like, well, I'm not too worried. Unfortunately, because he's actually a good killer of men. King of Men is a good killer of men. Although it's been a while since he's done it.
Well, I don't think she's not concerned about Bonnet's safety. She's concerned about an accident occurring and something happening to her loved ones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. She doesn't want Jamie to do it because it's not that she loves Bonnet and wants him to be safe. It's that she cares for her family. So she's concerned that maybe Roger knew of this. Claire thinks not. Bree answers, well, you kept it from me.
Mm-hmm.
So Bree says she'll discourage Jamie, and she expresses that she does want Stephen Bonnet dead, but she wants Jamie and Roger alive more.
Exactly. So you're weighing the advantages, disadvantages of both things. So it's like, let's say they go into it, and let's say that it's Roger and Jamie doing it together and they go after him.
Wait, say that again.
Let's say that Roger and Jamie together go after Bonnet.
That's not what I heard.
So let's say that
Roger and Jamie doing it together.
Cool. So let's say that they collectively go after Bonnet together. And let's just say one of them gets injured. She doesn't want that injury on her behalf. You know what I mean? So it's like, while she has, there's no love lost between her and Bonnet, and she personally would sleep better with him dead, it's not worth one of her men being damaged in the process. So I get it.
Absolutely.
All right, so that was chapter 37, and we're going to finish tonight's read-along and part 4 with chapter 38 entitled Dreamtime, with a subtitle of Roger Goes what's the word I'm looking for? Because my initial words that I wanted to choose.
Snooping?
Well, snooping, yes. But my initial word that my brain wanted to say was rape, but he's not raping her. She was clearly raped in a whole different way by Bonnet. But I mean, this is kind of a different kind of rape.
A trespass.
It is. It's just, well, but that's a different kind of rape.
I just think that word is it's a very strong word to use. I wouldn't use it out of context, out of its.
Especially given the fact that the character was previously actually raped. But I mean, I feel it is a trespass for sure. And he went to a place that he did not have permission to go.
Roger's secret name, intruder. That's all I'm going to say. So Roger is saying at a dude's wedding where he learned a new song and he wanted to transcribe it before he forgot it. So as soon as he gets back to the Ridge, he goes to Jamie's speak a word room where the little library is. So Diana gives us a tour of Fraser's Ridge Library. She describes what goes on the top shelf, which is more like reading that everyone's welcome to use. And then the second shelf and then the bottom shelf. And the bottom shelf as well is where his little journal is, where he keeps his little journal where he transcribes like songs and other things into. And after about 15 minutes, he's done and he puts the journal away and he pulls out Bree's sketchbook because that's there. And he says, she knew and she didn't mind if I looked at it. And he flips through drawings of Jemmy and some like engineering diagrams and puts it back. And then he takes out a book that wasn't a sketchbook. It was basically her dream journal. Let's pause for a second. Should he have continued once he opened it and realized what it was? I say no. What do you say, Sam? I think you already gave me your opinion at the top.
No. Once he realized what he was reading, he should have been like, clearly, this is trespassing.
Exactly.
I'm not allowed here anymore.
Now, he didn't have one chance to close it up. I didn't count them. We can together if you want, but I did remark on them. So let's start at the top. Quote, he turned the page, feeling unspeakably guilty at this intrusion, yet drawn irresistibly by the urge to penetrate the intimacy of her dreams. Unquote. Dang. What a verb.
See, that's a rape connotation. He's penetrating. He is penetrating her dreams.
And then the words, quote, feeling guilty but fascinated, Roger turned the page, unquote. So far, we have two times that he's feeling guilty. Two times. And two times he goes forward. Okay. And then he had been about to close the book, feeling a sense of guilt at his intrusion. The guilt was still there in spades, but totally insufficient to overcome his curiosity. He glanced at the door, quiet. No one was near the study, unquote.
So because no one was there to watch him penetrate her dream journal, he didn't have a problem with continuing to penetrate her dream journal?
He had a problem, but not a big enough problem.
Not a big enough guilt trip.
And then again, he laughs at her marginalia, the little note she writes in the margin, which is something about it, making a joke about something she had crossed out or whatever. And he glances around like to see if anyone had heard him laugh, and he's still alone. That's another chance, Roger. He's had like five chances now.
So by that justification, if no one's present, it's cool to keep penetrating somebody who hasn't given you permission. There's no consent, but because there's no one there to say stop, he doesn't need to stop.
Or to see you do it.
Forcing his penetration on her dream journal.
He reads that when she opened her eyes, this is the last thing he reads, that when she opened her eyes, after he reads this dream that she had been having, it was Stephen Bonnet inside her. Now, she had gone to the herb shed to be alone and tried to think about how she could make what had happened happen again, but with Roger. She wants to feel intense feelings. Like, she was having a great time with Roger. She knew his own soul name, I guess, just as she knew her own real name. But she said in order to have those feelings again, she would have to get into that space again with Roger. But for that, she thinks she'll need to remember his secret name. So he finishes this entry, puts the book back, sweaty palms and all.
And that was the very soul rapey chapter 38. Join us next time when we will be beginning part 5, entitled 'Tis Better to Marry Than Burn. And next time we will be covering one chapter, you guys. It's 24 pages long. It's a long one. Chapter 39 is entitled In Cupid's Grove. And we still have chapters available if you'd like to join in as a contributor to our read along. If you go to www.outlanderpod.com/thefierycross.
If you'd like to support content you believe in and content that is made just for, I mean, selfishly a little bit for us too. Yeah. Okay. But for and with the intended purpose of enriching the Outlander fan community, we invite you to check out our Patreon page and to support us in that very unique way. You can find out more at patreon.com/outlanderpod. And as always, we love you to help us continue the conversation in our Facebook community. Open 24/7, 365. You can join us there at outlanderpod.com/group. So thank you guys, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.